Good afternoon, everyone. This is the Senate Committee on Healthcare and Human Services. And as you can see, it's a committee of one right now, and I hopefully my two committee members that I know will be here will come shortly, and we have some work sessions to do. We will not be hearing House Bill 2620. Well, we'll be hearing House Bill 2622A, but there will be no work session on that since we are waiting for some conflict amendments. But I'm going to recess right now until I get a quorum. Convene the Committee on Healthcare and Human Services, and we are waiting for Senator Knope. Evidently, he is in the building, but at least we are going to open a subcommittee of the main committee until we get a quorum. I would like to open a public hearing on House Bill 2622A.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, 2622A changes the definition of physician to include a podiatrist. If context in which the term physician is being used does not authorize or require that that person practice outside of the scope of the podiatrist license. You have an A2 amendment that I believe the proponents will be speaking to. The A2 amendment has a minimal expenditure and a no revenue. We do have the proper paperwork on that. And Madam Chair, we do have a conflict amendment between House Bill 2622 and House Bill 2684, which is also on today's agenda. And when you're ready for that, we have Legislative Council here just to highlight the conflict between those two bills.
So okay. Will the conflict amendment be in the other bill? Or
no. No, the conflict amendment will be for 2622.
So we can't move that one.
So we can move 2684, but he can explain what the conflict is. But I don't have the fiscal and the revenue on the conflict amendment.
Okay. So, Tom Barrows.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Member of the subcommittee, Tom Barrows, representing the Oregon Podiatric Medical Association, here in support of House Bill 2622, which, as Sandy said, will change the definition of physician in Oregon to include doctor of podiatric medicine, podiatrist. And this is intended to, we've had problems in the past with being left out of legislation that the intent was to include podiatrists, but the use of physician was assumed to include them. This does not change the scope of practice, nor is intended to. It's clarified in the Angross bill. We also would urge your support of the A2 amendment, which brings the three in line and without separation in to subsections. There was some concern, there was confusion with that. There was also concern that maybe the or at the end of the first line might separate the two. With the A2s, we think that clears that up on both counts. The OMA has agreed to the Angross bill as well as the A2 amendment, and I want to thank them for being willing to work with us to come up with something that works. Be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Can we bring OMA up here just to put your point of view on the record?
Chair Montesanos and members of the committee, I'm Gwen Dayton. I'm the OMA's general counsel, and we were pleased to work with the podiatrist in coming up with something that worked. We understood the problem that you faced, and we hope that this clarification of the definition of physician gets them what they need, and we don't think it causes any other harm to the statutes.
Madam Chair, as long as we don't have to redefine the foot, I'll be fine. That goes back a long way.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mark, would you want to come up and just sort of describe, even though we haven't open the next bill. I guess I could open the public hearing on the next bill, too, since you're going to be referring to both.
The amendments to this bill. Right?
Okay. All right.
Chair Senator Mona Sanderson, Vice Chair Cruz, other members of the committee. I was asked to come up and briefly testify on the A3 amendments to House Bill 2622, which if House Bill 2684 becomes law, repeals Section 36 of House Bill 2622. Section 36, which is on page 31 of the A-engrossed bill, is merely a conforming amendment that specifies, it takes out some of the unnecessary language now that we've combined podiatrists into the physician definition. It's merely a conforming amendment. House Bill 2684, on the other hand, is a substantive change to the entire statute, and it specifically lists in generic terms, as opposed to referring to the definition, medical doctor, osteopathic physician, and pediatric physician and surgeon, along with all the other types of physicians there. We thought that the clearer way to go here was obviously with the substantive amendment that came out of the House Committee, House Bill 2684 on the conflict. So, any other questions on that?
Thank you, Mark.
It amazes me that you can make sense of all this.
Oh, Mark, we forgot to have you state your name for the record.
Oh, I apologies. Mark Mayer from Legislative Council.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right.
It always amazes me how to include something, we have to repeal something, so.
Okay. Well, it looks like there's no opposition, and we'll just schedule this at the next meeting with proper notice.
Monday or Tuesday?
Monday or Tuesday.
The paperwork should catch up by Monday, I would think.
I'm hoping.
Yeah, I mean, just for a conflict amendment, that's pretty easy.
Okay, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2622. Representative Gelser, which bill are you here for?
2740.
Okay, so I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2740.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2740 authorizes the State Board of Pharmacy to waiver the requirement for distribution of prescription drugs under the Charitable Prescription Drug Program. If the board determines that the waiver is in the best interest of public health and safety, this passed the House floor with 57 ayes and 3 excused.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Senator Cruz. For the record, my name is Sarah Gelser, representative from House District 16. I'm following Senator Cruz everywhere he goes today. So thank you for tolerating me one more time.
It's been a very pleasant experience, Representative.
Likewise. You've been showing me that the Senate is fun. So in 2009, we passed legislation creating a charitable pharmacy program. The idea came from a constituent of mine who was frustrated that her medicine cabinet had expensive leftover cancer drugs that she had to destroy, while other members of her support group did not have access to the very same pain-reducing or life-saving medications because they were either uninsured or underinsured. She thought that there should be a way to reduce waste and improve access to these important drugs. With the help of the Board of Pharmacy and this committee, in response to her concerns, we passed House Bill 2535, which established stringent patient safety standards to ensure the program would be safe and allowed sealed, unused prescriptions to be redistributed through a pharmacy. I'm pleased to report that the program is doing very well. There are currently 11 pharmacies who have collected and dispensed several thousand prescriptions. Recently, I was approached, actually at my church, by Penny Rear, who's a member of the Board of Pharmacy, and she's a professor at the OSU College of Pharmacy. And she indicated that the program would be strengthened by giving the board a little bit more discretion around the drug handling requirements. In the implementation of the legislation, the board has found that there are circumstances where medications may be safely redistributed, but the statutory language is too stringent to allow them to take these safe actions that will further reduce waste and further improve access for uninsured and underinsured Oregonians. House Bill 2740 will allow the board limited discretion to make these improvements to the program while preserving patient safety. One of the things that surprised me, the idea came in regards to cancer drugs, but the majority of the prescriptions that have been redistributed have been for mental illness, cardiovascular health, and diabetes management, just in the data that we're getting back from these charitable pharmacies. I believe there are representatives of the Board of Pharmacy here, but this is a great bill, and I hope that the Senate will be able to move it forward. And I can say it's a great bill because it was not my idea. Once again, it was the idea of the Board of Pharmacy and a constituent of mine.
Great. Thank you. Questions? No. Let's call Gary Schnabel.
Thank you, Representative Gelser, and Madam Chair. Mr. Vice Chair, I'm Gary Schnabel. I'm Executive Director for the Board of Pharmacy, and there's not much more to say. She described the program and why we want this bill. I could give you an example, though, of what got us to where we are. There was a charitable pharmacy licensed by us through that program. It was also a licensed pharmacy that had their regular pharmacy inventory, so they had a small segregated inventory of their charitable drugs. There was some drug in their pharmacy inventory that they wanted to contribute, but a couple of the containers had been opened. They were purchased from the manufacturer, they were stored in the pharmacy under the supervision of the pharmacist, and they had to move it from one side of the room to the other, from one shelf to the other, and we couldn't grant them a waiver to do that because the law says unopened container. So that's an example of a waiver that the board might be interested in allowing.
That's great.
Yeah. That makes perfect sense.
Absolutely. Well, if If I had a quorum, I would move the bill, but I don't have a quorum. So
appreciate that.
Thank you. I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2740 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2684.
Madam Chair, member of the committee, House Bill 2684 changes the circumstances under which a licensed physical therapist must refer a person to the medical doctor, osteopathic physician, a chiropractic physician, podiatric physician and surgeon, naturopathic physician, dentist, physician assistant, or a nurse practitioner.
Okay. Inga Deckert and Nick Seiwert.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair,
did you get
member
to,
of the committee.
Did you get to the gym on time yesterday?
I appreciate that. For the record, Inga Deckert here on behalf of the Oregon Physical Therapy Association in support of House Bill 2684. I have with me Nick Seiwert, who is a PT here in Salem, to testify. I'll walk through kind of what the bill does, and then I'll turn it over to Nick to talk about what he does day-to-day in his profession and how this bill would impact that. So simply, this bill does two things. Most importantly, it removes a statutory restriction on physical therapists from seeing a patient for more than 60 days without a referral. This impacts a relatively few, small number of PT patients. Most patients that see a PT do have a referral to see them. OPTA estimates that roughly maybe 10% of their patients don't. And of the patients that are treated, very few actually need to be treated beyond 60 days. That being said, this provision is outdated. The 60-day limitation is arbitrary, and it's not supported by medical evidence. So we're asking the committee's support to remove that restriction from statute. Second, the bill removes some inert language that has to do with PIP, personal injury protection insurance. Subsection 2 basically says that PIP is only required to pay for PT if the patient is referred, and then there's a specific list of providers that the patient can be referred by. My understanding from conversations both with PTs and with folks who represent PIP are that this language really doesn't have any real impact, that they can do that. They have the discretion whether to cover the services or not. So we're asking that that language be removed as well.
Madam Chair and Senator Cruz, just wanted to thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. My name is Nick Seiwert, and I'm a practicing physical therapist. And I'm just going to talk with you a little bit about dealing with the direct access issue for physical therapy services today. I've been a physical therapist for about 5 years, and I've been an active member of the Oregon Physical Therapy Association throughout that time. Occasionally in my practice, and more frequently in some of my colleagues' practices around Oregon, we have patients that seek physical therapy services directly without a referral from their doctor or primary care provider. Whether it's for the reasons associated with like finances, time, or just merely their preference, clients seek our services out without necessarily seeking a prescription first. With this, patients are clearly informed about, and PTs are acutely aware of our present statute of a 60-day limit on our direct access. PTs are also aware of their legal obligation to determine the appropriateness of that individual's participation in PT and then refer on to further medical evaluation when they're not appropriate. The present 60-day statutory limit is an arbitrary number that does not serve any legitimate medical purpose. Physical therapists are well trained in past and present curricula to screen systems for possible pathology or complications and to determine their appropriateness of each patient and their participation with physical therapy. We work as a team with other providers, and as required by law and our professional ethics, we don't hesitate to refer our patients to appropriate providers if they're not appropriate for the interventions or not improving with our interventions. A small percentage of people, like Inga was saying, a small percentage of people do require physical therapy services beyond 60 days, though. And right now, it's limited by the arbitrary rule and thereby may unnecessarily increase healthcare costs and present a barrier to treatment. For example, some individuals with high-level functional goals, such as marathon runners or triathletes, sometimes they may require frequent visits early on in their plan of care. And then as they progress functionally and as they demonstrate the ability to progress themselves, we may not need to necessarily see them as frequently as time passes. And so you start maybe with one or two times a week, and then you progress to a point maybe you have to check in with people two or three times every 2, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, something like that, to make sure that they still know what they're doing in order to progress themselves to the level, the high level of function that they want to achieve. So this process may at times take longer than 60 days, and having to send patients to their primary care provider, their doctor, simply because you've reached a certain date, regardless of their progress, is unreasonable, and it's not really a good use of healthcare dollars. On another note, evidence does show that patient direct access to physical therapy does not increase cost or put patient safety at risk. Some people may be concerned about the overutilization of PT services. However, in a 2011 study, analyzed more than 67,000 episodes of care in two direct access states and determined that the costs and utilization of PT services are actually lower in direct access states, and determined that the cost and determined that in that environment where PTs were able to prescribe the most appropriate level of care for their patients, they actually saw a decrease in the utilization. So the concern for overutilization has just not been realized in the 17 states with unlimited direct access. Healthcare Provider Service Organization is the largest liability carrier for physical therapists in the country, and it does not use direct access as a factor in underwriting, nor do they change a fee differential in premiums that provide that in places in physical therapists that provide direct access. So physical therapy is a well-established profession that works collectively with a wide group of clinicians, coaches, trainers, and other community leaders to provide the best care possible for our community members. I urge you please to pass House Bill 2684 so that we can best serve our community and reduce healthcare costs. Thank you.
Great. I remember when we went from 30 days to 60 days, and that was a huge fight. But it doesn't seem to be, there's no opposition this time. You've proven your worth. All right. Comments? Thank you very much. There's no one else to testify. No one in the room that wants to testify on this bill. I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2684 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2714.
Madam Chair, member of the committee, House Bill 2714 authorizes the pharmacy to perform certain tests and examination if the pharmacy has obtained the waiver from the appropriate waiver from the United States Department of Health and Human Services and complies with all other federal regulations. There is no fiscal, well, there's minimal fiscal, no revenue on the bill. This moved off the House floor with 57 ayes, 2 excused, and 1 legislative business.
Okay, Sean Miller and Bill Kratz.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Sean Miller, I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Community Pharmacy Council in support of House Bill 2714. This is a bill that essentially allows for basic health testing within pharmacies and integrates more preventative measures in the healthcare delivery system in pharmacies. The bill, in particular, removes some regulations that prohibit these tests to be conducted now in pharmacies by requiring a laboratory. And you know, pharmacies aren't intended to become a laboratory. But what the bill does, and most states are under this model, that allows these basic, what we call CLIA wave tests. And CMS regulates the laboratories under the Clinical Laboratory Improvement Amendment, which is, again, CLIA. And under this, there's certain requirements that you have to do to become be able to do these particular tests. And again, these tests are set like diabetes, cholesterol, body composition. But to get waived and being able to do these tests, there's three basic things that you must do. And it has to be cleared. The test must be cleared by FDA for home use, which means the patient should be able to do the test themselves at home. Now, a lot of patients don't like to do that, so they either have to see a physician or go to a laboratory that does this test. They, under this bill, they would be able to go into their pharmacy to do it. Employ methodologies that are so simple and accurate as to render the likelihood of erroneous results negligible. And the first federal test is pose no reasonable risk of harm to the patient. So those are the three criteria that actually the federal government looks at to be able to waive, again, a certain subset of tests to be conducted at the pharmacy level. Again, it's with chronic disease the ability for people to go in a more preventative nature. This particular bill just provides and complements a lot of the healthcare reforms that I think this committee has been working on for several years. And so we would appreciate your support, House Bill 2714, and happy to answer any questions.
Let's go with Bill, and then I'll ask questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Bill Cross. I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon State Pharmacy Association and the Oregon Society of Health System Pharmacists, and we too would like to urge your approval of House Bill 2714. And I think Mr. Miller did a great job of outlining what the provision in the bill would allow, and basically it enhances access and affordability for Oregonians, so we would like to urge you to support the bill.
I have a question on what will be the billing mechanism for these then? Will the insurance companies be billed?
Madam Chair, our understanding, yes. If it's a required medical necessity, for, let's say, a chronic illness where they have to conduct these tests, our understanding is yes. And if it's part of something that the patient has to do, this just allows another access point for them to be able to do it.
And you don't think that there's going to be overutilization? Well, we don't know. I'm sure we will hear about that.
Yeah, Madam Chair, we don't believe so. Again, a lot of the states have this. I think over 32 states have this already. And again, they have to follow all those federal guidelines. But again, they're the basic tests, the cholesterol, body composition, and glucose mm-hmm. tests. And so, we haven't heard any issues of overutilization.
Okay. And so there's a certain CPT code they would be using. I'm sure there is one for diabetes testing, cholesterol, and hypertension. Okay.
And Madam Chair, I think most of those tests are, required, whether they're annual, semi-annual, monthly, depending on the chronic condition. But they're not the type of tests that people would typically abuse.
Mm-hmm. And I can understand that. I have to now monitor my blood pressure every day for a while, and some don't have their own blood pressure cuff, and this way they would be able to, rather than having an office visit, going in or trying to find something, they would be able to utilize the pharmacy. Correct?
That's correct. That's
okay. All right. Sorry, I don't have a quorum.
We are too,
Madam Chair.
Okay, he's supposed to be on his way. But I will close public hearing on House Bill 2714. And we're going to open an informational meeting on technology and healthcare reform. And call up Bart Cunningham.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Cruz. My name is Bart Cunningham, for the record, and I work for Tempest Healthcare, the president of Tempest Healthcare. And we're a company out of Franklin, Tennessee, which is a suburb of Nashville. And we wanted to come in today because at a request of several senators, come in and talk with the healthcare committee about the technology that's out there as far as controlling costs for the Medicaid systems and across the country. So I've got a PowerPoint presentation, but it looks like it's... Oh, there it is. You guys are magic. But we titled it Improving Community Health Through Technology. And I first wanted to go across and define telehealth for you guys, because there's a lot of talk about telehealth. There's a lot of different definitions of telehealth. Telehealth can be either phone, talking with a clinician, talking together and then reporting on it, or it could be even surgery at a distance. So that's the difference, and there's just a lot of different definitions, but telehealth has a lot of different modes and clinical uses. The clinical uses of telehealth is, first of all, we transmit medical images and for diagnosis. It also works with groups or individuals in exchanging health services, and for educational via video conferencing, transmission of medical data for diagnosis or disease management, advice or prevention of disease and promotion of good health by patient monitoring and follow-up, and health advice by telephone in emergent cases. So those are the clinical uses of telehealth. Now, there's different modes of telehealth. You've got storm-forward telehealth, you've got real-time telehealth, and you've got remote patient monitoring. Those are the modes of telehealth. The storm-forward telehealth is what it is digital imaging. I put a image.
Mr. Cunningham, unfortunately, we're going to have to interrupt the informational hearing so that we can vote on these bills.
Okay.
And then we'll come right back to it. Can you just hold that? So thank you, Senator Knoop, for coming back. I would like to open a work session on House Bill 2684.
Let's start in reverse order. Okay, fine. Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2684 to the Senate floor to pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2684 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Hayward.
Excused.
Excused.
Senator Knoop.
Aye.
Senator Shields.
Excused.
Vice Chair Cruz.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. And
let's carry it. It's her bill.
It's, yes, Steiner Hayward's bill, so she will carry the bill, and I will close the work session on House Bill 2684 and open a work session on House Bill 2714.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2714 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2714 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Steiner Hayward.
Excuse.
Senator Knoop.
Aye.
Senator Shields.
Excuse.
Vice Chair Cruz.
Aye.
Chair Montanerson.
Aye. Motion carries. And Senator Cruz will carry the bill. I will close the work session on House Bill 2714 and open a work session on House Bill 2740.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2740 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2740 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Hayward.
Excuse.
Senator Knoop.
Aye.
Senator Shields.
Excused.
Vice Chair Cruz.
Aye.
Chair Montanerson.
Aye. Motion carries. And Senator Knoop?
Sure.
We'll carry the bill, and I will close the work session on House 2740. Mm-hmm. And thank you, Senator Knoop, for being here. And
you're welcome. Solid.
And now I'd like to resume our telehealth, which...
We'll close the work session.
Oh, yes. Close the work session on House Bill 2740. and reconvene the informational hearing on technology and healthcare reform. And I think this is a very important topic, and I think it's going to be very pertinent for our CCOs to look at ways of saving healthcare dollars. And I've been very impressed with the information that you have, and I'd like you to proceed.
Okay. Well, thank you. But getting back into the modes, the store and forward of telehealth is where they, like digital image, like radiology and stuff like that, where they take the picture, the doctor reads it one place, and then he sends it off to another place for the doctor to read it on the other end. Or a video, where you do a video, an audio, observation of daily and clinical data. That's what we mean by store and forward. Then there's real-time telehealth, which means that it's a personal emergency response system, the PERS system, which is I've fallen, I can't get up, those type systems, that's considered telehealth. Also, physician video visits, and you've got different devices there, but this is one that we utilize, and it's called the Touch, and it does the video capability, and it also does the remote patient monitoring of the patient, so when the clinician sees the patient, they also see the data on that patient for the trends that, of that data, of that information on that patient.
And so if you needed a that wouldn't actually do the blood pressure.
Yes, it does it all. It uses Bluetooth technology.
Okay.
I've got one here if you wanted us to demonstrate it, but it uses Bluetooth technology, and say you're doing an SpO2 because that was the easiest one to travel with. You just slip it on your finger, and then through Bluetooth technology, this device will measure that, and then it reports it up through the internet to us with a nurse sitting at a station, and we can evaluate the information, and then we can make recommendations on that, triage the situation. If that nothing needs to be done, nothing is done. But if there's something needed to be done, then we handle that, and we take care of it and get them to the primary care physician instead of going to the hospital or the emergency.
That would be massive for chronic disease management.
Yes.
Right.
So the test would be blood pressure. How about diabetes?
This device does not do the diabetes.
Okay. But blood pressure, CO2. What else?
It does weight. Blood pressure, and SpO2.
Okay.
Those are the
okay.
three things that this new device, they just hadn't got it, the Bluetooth technology in the other devices yet. But that's...
And who knows what the future will hold.
Right.
And what other tests
and come But that's the real-time telehealth. And then you have remote patient monitoring, which is a device that he can show you. It's only about a shoebox size, and that's it right there, the one that we utilize. And it's a Honeywell device. And what it does is you put into the back of it, to the side of it, the blood pressure cuff, the scale. It can do the diabetes. It can do the PTINR. It can do the peak flow. It can do a lot of different thermometer. I'm just trying to think of everything it does. But there's a lot of attachments to go on this device. It's been around longer. And what it does is it monitors those, and then it sends the information up to the web, and then it comes down to us with our nurses sitting at a computer monitor. And we can scale it where with the software that we've got developed, it will prioritize each one based on color levels. And being in healthcare, you probably understand that, but there's red levels, green levels, blue levels. And that's how the nurses know by the priority. If they're out of parameters, then it notifies them. Then they're calling the patient, and they're finding out what the situation is. Believe it or not, sometimes patients get on a scale with their cat or dog, and then they weigh a little bit more. So we're calling them to see why they gained weight, you know, what they eat, and then they tell us, "Oh, I'm standing here with a cat. I'm sorry." And then, or they have their husband or wife do it, and then it's totally different, and it sets off all kinds of alarms. And then so our nurses are calling them to check on them that way.
So what is the cost of that unit and the other unit?
They're both the same thing. It's $10 a day to put them in the home.
Okay, $10 a day. All right.
And we recommend for the prevention of hospitalization, you do it for 90 days because the 30 days you want to prevent that, and then you do it for the extra 60 days just because you're wanting to make sure that patient is not going to go back into the hospital. But what we do is our nurses are constantly looking at it, and if they feel that there's no need, we discharge them, and we'll let the whoever we're contracted with know that that's what we've done, and we're discharging patients that way. So.
And have you piloted these anywhere yet?
Yes, we're doing them in Pennsylvania right now. And Honeywell's done these. Where Honeywell started out was in the home care world. But what we found, I was used to be the CEO of Windsor Home Care Network, which was a home care network across 30 states, and we sold it to different health plans like Aetna, Cigna, PHCS, those type entities, and we'd sell the network to that. But we were priding ourselves in controlling the cost for these health plans, and the way we did that was using these devices. We sold that three years ago, and when we did, we had a little extra money, so we decided to do this piece of it instead of the whole network. We'd do this because this makes more sense, because this is what we did. With the home cares, what happens is, in the Medicare Advantage world, that's what happened during all this, is Medicare Advantage happened. A lot of the entities were paying by the visit instead of the episodic payment. And what happened was these nurses or these companies wanted to get those patients, their nurses out to the patients instead of doing the telehealth. Mm-hmm. So that's why mm-hmm. we decided to bring it in-house and do it the way we're doing it. Mm-hmm. So these health plans could have a program set up that is already ready to go, and then all they got to do is just give us a call, and we ship the device out, we put it in there, and this price includes the device, the cost of the device, and it includes the nurse, and includes everything. We're not going to charge you anything extra for the blood pressure cuff or anything different. It's mm-hmm. whatever the device can hook up to, that's what we charge. Mm-hmm. And but it also does disease management. And what that means is it'll ask questions. I don't know if you can see on the screen there, but it asks it legibly. You can see it. And then it also has a voice. It'll talk to you. And it also, and it's easier to use. I'm sorry. And it's easy to use with the way you don't have to push any buttons. It talks to you, and it reminds you. It's like an alarm clock in the morning. It says time to take your vitals. And it'll ask that every 10 minutes. Up till 30 minutes. And after that 30 minutes, it sends out an empty packet to us, and then our nurse is calling them, asking them why they haven't taken their vital signs. So compliance is at a high level with this program. Mm-hmm. Also, the satisfaction is very high. Patients get on it, and they really don't want to get off of it after 90 days because they just seem to like it. But that's the devices. And what our expertise is in the remote patient monitoring. To give you a little bit of market analysis of the other products that are out there, there are other products out there. We looked at all of them, and of course, we chose the Honeywell, but that gives you that list. Also, we looked at a lot of different studies, and this is the problem that's out there impacting healthcare costs. You've got those, like what Senator Cruz said, was the high-risk patients or those ones that you're trying to do the management of. And this study did show that 26.9% of all CHF Medicare hospitalizations and 22.6% of all COPD Medicare hospitalizations are early readmission within 30 days of discharge. So if we can reduce those numbers, we can reduce the hospitalizations, which are costing the healthcare a lot of money. And I think you guys well know that. And that's New England Journal of Medicine. Now, we did an analysis on Oregon Medicaid, and we got the numbers from the www.healthfacts.org, and that's the Henry J. Kaiser Family Foundation website. But we got the numbers off that, and we could save the Medicaid 50% on rehospitalizations just by concentrating on those three categories, CHF, COPD, and diabetes. Mm-hmm. And we did it with the Windsor Medicare Extra. We can do it with all the CCOs here. Mm-hmm. So and it's a great savings.
We have funding. I don't know how you get the funding through the Affordable Care Act regarding innovative. I think you were telling me about that earlier.
I think Marshall was, and he's not here right now with us. And I'm sorry.
Anyway, I would hope that some of the CCOs would look at, we have to focus, in order to save money, we have to focus on the chronic disease.
All right.
I mean, that's obvious. And something like this, I think once we maybe do some pilots, we'll prove how much money they will save. And it would be nice if we could get a pilot in Oregon.
Right. And that's what We were hoping for, too. We've talked with several of the CCOs, and they're looking for that also, to help partner with them and then help move this forward. But just the reimbursement by state, if you look at the whole United States, there are 44 states that pay for it. There are some that don't, as far as all of telehealth. This is not the remote patient monitoring. Now, as far as remote patient monitoring, only 7 states pay for remote patient monitoring. As you can see, Pennsylvania does through their Department of Aging. So does South Carolina and South Dakota. But that's how they pay for it. And we're in Pennsylvania working right now. So we're wanting to look at other states and convince other states that this does work, and love to do pilots with you guys on that.
Well, I know, I'm sorry that Senator Steiner Hayward isn't here, because telehealth she had a couple of bills, telehealth bills, that we have passed out of the Senate. I don't know how they would affect this concept, but I think we're getting there, and the fact that our sister state, Washington, has developed something, you know, hopefully we're going to be soon following that.
Yeah, and another thing that we're willing to commit for you guys is that if we get this pilot, that we'll put a call center here as our Western, because we're the primary call center for Honeywell, so we need a Western presence. And so we'd like to put it in Oregon and hire 100 nurses and let them manage it for us here, and it's Oregonians taking care of Oregonians instead of Tennessee, you know.
This would be jobs.
Yeah, but that's just some things that we're talking about. The provider and staff benefits, and doctors love this because it gets customizable to meet specific needs, chronic management needs. It also complete objective data. It's also subjective data because we can provide the notes that we're taking when we're talking to these patients. Also, it allows for preemptive care, supporting adjustments in the treatment plan. So if their medications need titrating up, we can get them to go to their doctor and get the medication titrated up so their blood pressure is at a normal state. It reinforces education and compliance to treatment plan. Again, we're doing the disease management questions. It also does, the device will remind them of their doctor's visit. It will also wish them a happy birthday. And we program it to do that. But if we know that information, we're putting it in there. So it will say, happy birthday today. You know, and so it's pretty neat how that works. It breaks the cycle of emergency care and hospital readmissions, of course, and it supports documentation of time spent for care plan oversight. So it does all that. Now, as far as most important to me is patient information or patient benefits. It acts as an educational tool to reinforce medication use, diet restriction. It also encourages patient self-management of reinforcing positive behavior and lifestyle changes. It tracks and reinforces compliance with treatment plan. So we're making sure they're staying on the plan that the doctors have set. And then we're calling them if they're not meeting those plans. And it provides sense of security for users and families through daily monitoring. Care provided based on their clinical need and facilitates patient engagement. So it's a good tool. Another good thing about it is I know my mother was on one of these devices, and she lives in Florida. And I'd always call her up. I don't know if your parents are still alive, but, you know, you called them up, and they'd say, how you doing? And they'd always say, oh, I'm fine. Don't worry about me, is what she would always say. Well, then I knew she wasn't feeling well, and we had her on this device, and she has a pacemaker. And so we could pull it up on my cell phone. The information up on my cell phone, when I would call her, I would know that she's having problems, and then I could tell her, hey, you need to get to the doctor, or you need, it helped me get involved in her life and stay involved in her life. So again, it helps in education and building families too, but that's getting a little stretchy, but that's why we used it as a family, and my sisters and brothers did the same thing. So that's good with this device. And now the Partnership of Excellence is a partnership with Honeywell and HomeEd. They provide the devices and the content application. Tempus provides all the services as far as getting the device to the patient, setting it up, and then also with the monitoring of the patient on a daily basis. So we improve it, and it's worked for us. Remote patient monitoring can enable improved post-discharge patient oversight, improve patient outcomes, improve patient satisfaction, reduction in 30-day readmissions, a reduction in ER visits, and improved patient compliance, and decreased cost of care. And that's what we're all sitting here for.
That's great.
Any questions?
Yeah. What about the confidentiality? Since it's web-based, and all this data's flying through the air.
Right. Well, what we've done is Honeywell's got security. They got firewalls and all that built around the software itself. They can't get its password protected and all that. Now, as far as our center, we've got the most current security that we can have on our computers and then also on our facility itself. And we don't do, just because of that HIPAA rules, and we don't do a lot of the nurses going home and working out of their home. They come to the facility where it's secure. We've got the cameras up, and we also have a facial, it's called a face-in, where they get into the call center. They got to put their face in it. They also have a card they have to put on, and then a passcode. Mm-hmm. So it's three levels of the five that the government recognizes in the military. It's made by the Navy, but it's not waterproof. Go imagine that. But we can put it outside the doors at the inner. But that's what level we're doing as far as protecting the information, and that's what's key to us too, because we don't. You know, we don't want this information getting out at all. And we have to go through HIPAA compliance training with all our staff does. And we have to meet URAC standards. And so that we do that on a annual basis. We're going through HIPAA training and going through that process also.
Great.
Even I do, and even he does. So.
Well, thank you so much. I'm so sorry that the rest of the committee, usually this doesn't happen on this particular day. They all had commitments. But I want to thank you so much for coming. Senator Cruz.
You've had conversations with the health authority. I know that, correct?
Yes. We talked with Dr. Goldberg and the governor's Bowman or
Bonetto.
Mike, yeah.
Bonetto.
Mm-hmm. Chief Man Bonetto. I don't. We talked to so many people. I don't remember who. I think we even talked with you, Senator Cruz.
You did.
Back
yes.
in December.
Yes.
But yeah, we've talked with Dr. Goldberg. We even met him this morning, and going out of Representative Greenlick's office, bumped into him, and he says, "How's it going? I hope it goes well." You know, he's really wanting us to succeed at this. So,
well, the chair was talking about pilots, and I think that would be something the health authority would need to kind of implement, because, you know, I mean, find a CCO that's willing to do it, but I think that's got to be. The pilot needs to be kind of top down, because the innovation dollars are somewhat controlled at that level is what can be done.
Well, if a CCO wanted to have an innovative project using this, we would have a process where they would apply for the funds, and I'm not sure how that, but it would have to go through the health authority, yeah. and I'm not sure what their process is right now on distributing those funds, but yeah.
Yeah, I know there's several different legislation currently going, like you said, with the other senators that are pushing telehealth type legislation. Mm-hmm. So we'd love to participate and be one of the companies that get a chance to participate in those pilots.
Great.
All right.
All right. Well, thank you so
thank
much
you.
For coming.
Thank you.
And I'm going to close the informational hearing, and seeing nothing on the agenda, our next meeting is Monday.
Sure.
We're adjourned.
I'll be here.